welcome. This is our Stronach 5 Players podcast for the races of Friday, March 5th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker once again. Very happy to be joined by a returning guest to this show and a very popular figure in racing. He works for the Stronach Group. He is the announcer at Gulfstream Park, announcer Pete himself. Pete Aiello, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing great. You got to tell me a little bit more about this Brooklyn Bunker. I like that nickname.
Oh, it's fun. It gets more play on the international broadcast that I do, where you can see it. So basically, I've got my camera, I've got my lights, I've got my four monitors, and then I've got a vinyl collection about 3,000 pieces deep behind me, and I can stay down here for days at a time when necessary and when the workload calls for it, as it often does during the horse racing season. It's like a little bit of a man cave meets an office, meets a gym, meets a guest room. I think that's the best way to describe it.
Sounds sweet.
Jonathan Kinchin is convinced it's haunted, by the way, but I think that's just like unfamiliar boiler noises, you know, this old plumbing we have in these ancient New York buildings that, you know, him and new construction in Austin, he's not so familiar with it. But you are a huge proponent of the Stronach 5, Overlay City, as you like to call it, and I have to say it's really lived up to that name in some of these recent weeks. And it's a bet I assume you're still pretty enthusiastic about.
Absolutely. I'm still waiting for somebody to print up the t-shirts, and we need to get a rewrite of the entire song. You know, Dave Rodman and I have taken care of the first verse, but we need a little help. You know, we need a little help for the rest of the lyrics. I was listening again the other day, and it can definitely be done. I just need a little creative input from everybody.
Hey, I mean, you're friends with the guys in Foreigner. They might be able to offer a little bit of advice, or at least give you some coaching to get the rest of the thing done.
I wish I was actually friends with the guys in Foreigner.
I saw a photo.
Fanboy, but
I saw a picture.
Well, no, that is true, but I had to pay for that photo. Now, granted, they were very, very nice about it, and I enjoyed talking to the saxophone player about going to Hialeah in the 70s. Oh. But it was a paid appearance for them, but they were very nice about it, so no complaints at all.
That's awesome. I have to say, there is a great connection between musicians and the racetrack. I mean, thinking back to the day in New York and talking to Harvey Pack about Cab Calloway, after whom there's still a stake named in New York, but he was a legit regular who handed out many a trophy on the NYRA circuit. And then Steve Van Zandt, who I've seen many times out at Santa Anita, who's still a regular out there, and getting to interview Southside Johnny. Gosh, it was now 2 years ago when he appeared at Belmont on Belmont Eve to do a little concert. It's pretty cool, and it makes sense because that musician lifestyle, you know, they all sleep in. It's like you wake up. What are you going to do on a weekday? You go to the track.
Yeah, actually, not to belabor the experience of meeting Foreigner, but I had made a bet to all of my friends that when I met them, I would invite them all to come to the races, and they didn't believe that I would do it or didn't believe I would have the time to do it. And Mick Jones, who, of course, is the founder, he actually lives in South Florida. So I said, Mick, I know you're pretty busy these days, but if you're ever looking for something to do, you know, the racetrack's always open. And you know, he was very gracious. He wasn't rude or anything about it, but it was the saxophone player, Tom Gimbel, who was like, oh, yeah, he used to go to Hialeah and Calder way back in the day. He goes, it was a lot of fun. I said, well, you're welcome to come anytime you want. So
that's awesome.
And then I think it was, I don't know what the timetable was, but it was interesting because, of course, one of the Pegasus World Cups, we had Mark Ronson here,
yes,
who is the stepson of Mick Jones.
That's right.
So that was really cool to bridge, you know, the era of music that I like with what all the cool kids like now. So.
Ronson's
made me feel a little bit younger anyway.
That's awesome. He's such a great producer. And in part because I think he brings in some of that, a bunch of different types of old school style into what he's doing. Yeah, I totally forgot he was hanging out there with the fancy people in his designer t-shirt. That's my memory of seeing him there that day. All right, enough about rock and roll, though you know I could talk about it, rock and roll and music all day. Let's dive in to these Stronach 5 races. Leg A, we're going to be at Laurel Park, their eighth race. The scheduled post time is 3:55. We're on the dirt going 5.5, allowance for 4 and up. And Pete, we'll let you kick this one off. How are we going to get this thing started?
of course you give me the lead off of the hardest race in the sequence. I mean, Pete, I think this race is by far and away the most difficult leg of the sequence this week. Just because I don't have a full understanding of how the pace is going to develop in here. It does look like there's some one-dimensional speed, but, you know, we're only going 5.5. So the question is if you're going to pick a closer, who's the right one? So I would advise to spread on your tickets, but my must-uses in the race in order of preference are the 5 Inside Risk, the 4 Joseph Is Real, and the 3 John's Promise, who may be a little bit of a price, for Mike Gorham. I think that those are the horses to me that are most likely to have enough natural speed to get in position behind what I figure will be a pretty contentious early pace.
It is a very open race, and yet we have 2 of the same 3 horses. I had Inside Risk as my top pick, and I was just thinking that this one has a chance to get the best trip of all, enough tactical speed to sit maybe towards the back of the top half of the field. And this runner, if you look through the PPs, has shown some good finish at times, was maybe a little close the last day, but I'm hoping, you know, jockeys and their agents and trainers, they read the PPs too. If Inside Risk can sit and try to pounce, I thought that could work. I was with you on the 4. Joseph Is Real, some of the best numbers overall. And I felt like it was significant that Karamanos, who'd ridden a few of these last time, ends up in this spot. And the other one I wanted to mention was the 12 Bourbon Street, who I thought was just a little bit interesting moving to the high percentage Farrier Barn. This one would probably have to be the speed of the speed or just emerge best of the speed and hang on. But I was hoping we could get out with those numbers. Do you, in terms of looking at this as A's and B's, would you just be looking to use 5, 4, and 3 equally in that order? Or would you want to grade them any differently or throw in any other backups?
Well, I think that the 4 and 5 are probably my A's. I'd say that if I had a B, it would be the 3, John's Promise, who, by the way, is coming out of the same race as your horse, the 12 Bourbon Street, and they were not that far apart, and that race was unbelievably live. The top 3 finishers in that race all came back to win, including a horse that most Maryland fans are very familiar with, Nomo Ron. So this horse is keeping some good company, as is Bourbon Street, who lost to a repeat 1 or 3 back. So I think that the 3 is probably my B, and then C's include your horse, the 12 Bourbon Street. I'm dead set against the 10, the Kingston Pike. I think he's going to take a lot of money. My other C's for saver possibilities would be the 9, the Revenger, and the 13, Royal Crusader, who probably needs a little more ground. But his figures are okay, and with the outside draw and low profile connections, maybe we can get a big price to kick it off.
I'm with you. I like where you're going with that. And number 10, Kingston Pike, I just thought got the run of the race last time. I suppose could again, but in an open race, I'm going to be against that one, who should be at the top of the market. So yeah, we'll hopefully be right together in leg A as we move on to leg B. Gulfstream Park's 7th race, 4:12 is the scheduled post time for this 1 mile turf affair. 3-year-old fillies claiming ranks 35 down to 25. There were 2 I wanted to mention in this spot, starting with number 2, Cheerleader Barb. Looks very interesting to me, 2nd time off the layoff. Didn't break very well that last day and ran on. Now, that was a weird race for the clock, the figure makers. I don't have pace figures for it, but just looking at how the pace held together in that spot, I think Cheerleader Barb may have been a little bit against the flow. One that I feel like seems to be poised to move forward in the second start against winners. And then the 7, Celestial Cheetah, just looked pretty obvious off the last run, beating up on Starter Allowance Company in a nice time. The turf feels reasonable here to me, given the pedigree. But I'm, you know, those are 2 I definitely want to include somewhere, but I defer to you for what our proper graded out A's and B's should be. How do you see it?
Well, I can corroborate your comment about Cheerleader Bard being against the flow and against the bias. And there really has been a distinct speed favoring bias on the turf course throughout the meet. Now, that being said, it doesn't mean if you're not the best, if you're the best horse, you can't win from off the speed. You know, when I looked at this race, Pete, I thought that if the 7 could turf, that she was an absolute stone cold lock in here. She won her last race by many. Now, she did get the perfect setup. That was one of those races where it was a mile race, but by the half-mile pole, I could have, you know, shut the mic off and said, okay, the 7's a cinch, and then turn the mic back on, only to watch her draw away by 6. That was the type of perfect setup she got that day. So don't be too enamored with the 74 figure. If she runs it back, she's going to win by 8. But she did get that figure when getting the perfect trip. That being said, she does look like she's the fastest horse in here, and I have some question marks with pretty much everybody else in the race. So the A horse for me would be Celestial Cheetah. She's going to be my likely single. Possible includes maybe the 3 Crystal Coast off a bad race on dirt last time out. Her race 2 back was much better. I don't know where she stacks up against these horses. That's the problem with this race. I don't have a good feel for where everybody belongs if they brought their A game to the table. The 6 Serenade a Kitten, if she wasn't making a barn change, would probably be a strong second choice in this race. But her last race was pretty awful, and she got claimed, and it's hard to move up off Mike Maker. So if you can give her a mulligan for that race and you're confident that Epler will have this horse as good as Maker did, then you can use her. I think there's a possibility that the 1 Viking Queen gets overlooked. Her 2 wins were with low-profile figures, one of them at GPW. But her last race, she got beat 5 lengths to I Get It. And just putting things in perspective, if I Get It was in this field, she would be 2-5 on the morning line. Now, that's the good news. The bad news is Coffee Buzz Buzz, who ran 2nd in that race, came back to run here yesterday at Gulfstream on the dirt and ran filthy. So it's really a muddled form race. You either have to take Celestial Cheetah at what she looks like on paper, or you're going to have to spread.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, we'll try to have our cake and eat it too, I think, with Celestial Cheetah on the A-line and then a number of backups. Did you, you don't mind my concept of having Cheerleader Barb somewhere in the mix? Did you have, not one of the ones you came up with, but did you have anything against that one?
No, not at all. Other than the fact that, you know, maybe she's racing against the bias, but given who she's in against, I have nothing bad to say about Cheerleader Barb at all.
All right, let's move on to leg C. We head out west to Santa Anita for their 3rd race, 4:35 Eastern, where a mile on the dirt, 3-year-old maiden special weight. It's your turn to kick us off, and I'm hoping you can be a little more creative than me. I would describe my opinion in this race as wildly uncreative.
I would have to agree with you, but I did do a little research before I came on the air with you about this, because I'm not familiar with Southern California racing, I'll be the first to say. So when I was looking at the 8 horse Harbored Memories, I was trying to figure out how the horse could get such a huge figure when getting beat at 13-1 last time out. Got an 86 buyer speed figure for that race, and I said, wait a minute, who is this horse that beat Harbored Memories last time out? And this was a first-time starter from the Pete Ertenshed row that won like a good thing. And I don't know if you saw that race.
Oh, of course.
Speak more to the visual impressiveness of Dream Shake.
It was awesome.
It should be noted that the horse who was 7th in that race was the international good thing Bezos, who ran bad.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Dream Shake couldn't have been more impressive. And Harbored Memories just looks like one who should come on for that run. This is a big, it's the same class level in theory, but this is a massive drop in class without that runner showing up. And yeah, Dream Shake, very interesting item. Curious to see how ambitious they get with him. I would assume it's onto the graded stakes ranks and Derby Dreams, as good as that one looked. Of course, it's not going to be easy. Have another well-hyped Baffert runner in Fenway in this race to deal with. I know Hozier is also fairly well-regarded Baffert horse that Fenway finished 2nd to. I just wanted to see a little bit more in the finish, but I really thought that these two had it between them. I suppose there's a chance they could bang heads and set it up for a runner who could come a little bit more from off the pace, but I just couldn't fully warm to the meltdown scenario and felt like they'd slow it down enough that either Fenway or Harbored Memories would get the job done. Did you have any other numbers you wanted to include?
I mean, I guess it depends on how you're structuring your tickets. If you're really reaching and you wanted to have, you know, have a ticket to knock people out after getting a couple of chalks early in the sequence, I guess you could use the other Baffert, Hudson Ridge, who goes to dirt for the first time after being not great but not awful last time either, and he does get some more ground to work with. So I could see him as a potential upsetter, but it's intriguing to me because here's a horse who went near the lead last time sprinting on the turf, and he's going out for the same barn that has the likely pace setter in Fenway, which is always fascinating. You would hope that you would have complementary running styles, so maybe Van Dyke will take a big reinful of Hudson Ridge and that might work better for him.
That's a great point. Team tactics should come into play in this spot. And as much as I generally don't like Baffert's starting on turf, I usually see that as a negative. This horse is going to be a big price. And just with that idea that, hey, they're going to try hold-up tactics today, if those two are gasping for air as they turn for home, maybe Hudson Ridge could get involved. I'm always game for trying to cleverly, for a small amount of money, include a horse like that on a backup line, and I think that's what we'll do in that's what we'll do in this spot. Maybe play the 7 and the 8 as A's and the 1 as a B. Between the 7 and the 8, you give preference to the 8 over the 7. That's who you led with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was on the Fenway bandwagon when he ran his first race. I actually didn't go back to watch his last race, but his first race was enough for me to never think that he's a cinch anywhere.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. All right, let's move on to Leg D. We head up north in California for their third race, 4:53, the scheduled post time. We're on the all-weather going 5.5, three-year-old maiden eights. And I was going to take a little shot. I don't know. I haven't got to look back at the morning lines, but I was thinking this horse could be a halfway decent price. The number 3, even or even worse. This horse caught money against much better in Southern California just 2 weeks ago. Obviously did zero running there, but back quick. And I thought the synth was an interesting play for this one. According to the Timeform U.S. breeding ratings, should be best over it. And then you've got this hot barn adding to the appeal. I wanted to mention the 5 Rest Easy 2-4 as a potential backup type play, as one who I think could be the best of speed, catching what looks to be an easier group than the last day. But the 3 was where I wanted to hang my hat in this race. Pete, how did you see it?
I can respect your opinion. I actually like a bomb in this race. This is one of those races where I would just that I was going to try to get a price horse, only because, you know, as we've touched on, if I'm going to single Celestial Cheetah and then go A-B in terms of chalk in the Santa Anita leg, I need a little spice to my life. And I went with the 6 horse in this race, Pete, Incredible Champ. I kind of like the idea that this horse has really not had his head kicked in. He hasn't run great. I get that. But he really hasn't embarrassed himself on too big a level. And those races were for 25. Now, I know the speed figures say that he's going to have to do a lot better, and he's never taken any money. But I have major issues with everybody that's run in this race, and everybody that's going to take money, to me, appears to have some significant chinks in the armor. So with that in mind, I'll reach for the stars and go for Incredible Champ. 10-pound Bug Boy kind of worries me a little bit. I'm not going to be dishonest about that. But the source is, you know, he looks like he's still learning to me, and he, you know, he's going to take a drop in class today, or Friday, I should say. And I saw a little bit of improvement from that first race to that second race, and he just looked a little green to me. I went back and watched his last race, and I don't know. I think that the, you know, if you look at the race, it looks to me like the 2, the 5, and the 8 all have a destination for the front. So the pace should be contested, if nothing else. So somebody should be running home. Maybe it's your horse, the 3, or maybe it's my horse, the 6. And, you know, this is, you know, cynically speaking, this is the type of horse. This horse is going to run like second or third, beaten a half length at 20-1. So if you're playing this race, make sure you include him in your tries. You can thank me later.
I love it. I agree that this is a spot where getting a price in makes a ton of sense, even or even worse, only 9-2 on the morning line. But I think you and I are both united in being very meh about the 2 who are going to catch the most money, presumably the 1 and the 8. So I think I like this idea as a place to take a little bit of a stand. Depending on how the tickets shake out, I'm not wholly opposed to having a spreadier backup line, but, you know, I'm liking for, in terms of our A line, to go with the 3 and the 6 in the spot. Any specific other numbers to name check, or are we just going to leave you as Incredible Champ in this spot?
Well, this horse comes with a major asterisk, and I don't know that this is a true statement, or I can hope that it's a true statement, but look at the 2 horse, Pete, Walking with Dino. Again, I'm searching for a price. I'm searching for horses that are coming out of races that are not made in 8. That's my strategy in this race. So you look at Walking with Dino. He's 3-1 2 starts ago for 25, did no running of any kind, but he pressed 4 wide. And I'm sure that Golden Gate is no different than any other racetrack in the country. If you're boogieing on the front end, and they were that day, anybody who's trying to press that issue four wide has no chance. I don't care who they are. So I can give him a pass for that race. The problem is his last race. Then he comes back. He saw, you know, he took money again on the class drop, and he was four wide and didn't really do much running. So I think they might need to try to change tactics with this horse, and that's where things get a little dicey. His best races were races where he was near the lead. We're only going 5.5 here. Can Roman get him to tuck in a little bit, especially when he knows that there's speed on his outside? I don't know if he can, but at 10-1, if you can get that, that might be an interesting idea.
I like it.
I mean, this horse has taken money against much better his last two.
I think that's an underrated angle, as is what you're saying about looking at looking at a lot more. I don't know what it is, just the racing in New York lately. I've found there's been a lot of like interesting subtle class angles, and that idea of trying to look at where horses have been competitive, where they've broken their maidens, then coming back and starter allowances. You can find some subtle hints as to ability. And something that JK and I are always hammering on about that I don't often hear people talk about is just the signal that you get from seeing how horses were bet in their recent starts. The crowd in aggregate is the best handicapper there is. This horse isn't 3-1 and 7-2 against better without there being some little bit of signal in that, in those numbers. Is it a horse we want as a favorite? Absolutely not. Is it a horse who at 10-1, the value of which should be preserved in a bet like Overlay City, the Stronic 5? Is this one we should be throwing in? I think absolutely. So I'm glad you mentioned that one. Make sure to have the two walking with Dino in our reckoning as well. From there, we head back to your neck of the woods, Pete. Leg E, Gulfstream Race 9, scheduled post 5:16, 1 mile on the turf, 4 and up fillies and mares, optional claimers. And I ask you the big question, how are we going to get paid?
Well, I'm going to actually have to, what is that show, name that tune. I'm going to go back to you, and you can name that tune as far as this race goes. Because when I made the morning line for this race, I was completely confused. And when I handicapped this race, I was completely confused. To me, everybody looks the same. So I, not only do I not have a good gauge of who's going to be bet in the race, I have not a good gauge of who's going to run well in the race either, because to me, everybody looks the same. If you forced me to make a selection and you said you have to bet $2 on this race and you have to bet somebody to win, I'd take the Clamott Simplicity only from the standpoint that I think she's got enough tactical speed to get where she needs to get. But outside of that, and maybe the Mott horse on the Improve, who these are very as you said, these are very unimaginative selections. I don't really have a good, strong gauge as to how this race is going to play out. So why don't you go first, and I'll feed off of what you say.
Sounds good. I mean, I certainly think you got the favorite right with Simplicity, who makes sense. My only fear was potentially getting considerably bet down in a race that I see as so open. The two that I was interested in that I need somewhere are the 6, LaShara. I was a big fan of her work last year. And just, I don't have a clock or report or anything, but just looking at this workout tab, this one looks to be working well for the return to the races. And then we can also build in a little bit of speed figure improvement for age for this runner who hasn't been out in 168 days. If she's going to, you know, you'd expect them at that point in their development to still be improving a point or two a month. If she does that for the time she's been away, they could all be running for second. So I definitely want some of number 6, LaShara. And then I thought that the 4, Kissing Frogs, as you mentioned, actually, I said that incorrectly before. Kissing Frogs is actually the morning line favorite. And I totally get, because this one I thought closed well without a particular setup on the last day. Second off the long layoff here. Maybe a little bit of hesitation if against the profile like we were talking about before. But I'd love to have 4, 6, and 8 somewhere. But, I mean, I could tell you a story about every horse in the race. So, I mean, we're not really seeing it that differently in the big picture of life. Who else would you definitely – I mean, let's picture it. We're 4 of 4 in the Stronic 5. We're waiting for this race to go. Who do we want on our tickets?
I got to have the 2 of the horses we haven't talked about yet. I gravitate to horses like this. I mean, this is a graded stakes placed horse, 3 back in the Lake George at Saratoga. Didn't disgrace herself at all in the Valley View. Her last race doesn't count at all. So she's racing against significantly better stock. And that's really the rub with Kissing Frogs, just to go off on a little bit of a dissertation about her. the waters are exponentially deeper for her today than they were in her last race.
Yeah, that's fair.
The counterbalance to that is that Bill Mott never wins off the layoff, and she won like a good thing while off almost a year. So, and another thing that you mentioned that I think is such an important point that needs to be more discussed on regular podcasts about handicapping is the exact point you made about horses getting better with age from a figure standpoint. If you're looking at a horse that has figures from a year ago and you're banking on that horse being fit or ready to rock and roll, it stands to reason that the figure will be better if you're right, and Kissing Frogs is a perfect example of that, as she won with a 12-point hike on the Byers speed figure scale while off a year. But she also was a 3-year-old when she broke her maiden, and then I was a 4. Actually, she was a 2-year-old when she broke her maiden, and then she was a 3-year-old last time. Now she's making her 4-year-old debut.
It's an open race, and I think we want to have all of those numbers in there. And we probably haven't even mentioned the quote-unquote most famous horse in the race in terms of C.J. Thoroughbred.
Sally's Curlin.
Yeah, Sally's Curlin. I mean, she could turf, definitely. But I was going to probably say I think the fame might depress the value with her, and I'll be happy for CJ and the team if they win. I think I can leave the 3 off and not feel too bad about my life afterwards. Any others?
I agree with you. I think that if she's going to beat us, she's going to beat us, and I'll make sure I unleash the big call just to put a final nail in our coffin if it happens.
Love it. Good stuff. Well, I think we've got enough to work with here. What I'll do is what I've been doing on these shows. Scratches will come in tomorrow. I'll look at things one more time and put tickets together. I'll pop them up on the show page. Folks can check that out in themoneypodcast.com. Just navigate to the latest Stronach 5 show. Click on that and you'll be able to see things there. I know you've got to get to work, my friend, but we'll hopefully get a chance to chat with you again soon. Always a pleasure catching up and getting to talk handicapping, and hopefully we give out some winners, and it's a great day tomorrow.
Thanks for letting me ride on your ferry to New York or Overlay City, Pete.
I love it. Pete Aiello, thank you so much. Thanks also to our friends at the Stronach Group, especially Steve Cook. Been such a pleasure working with him on these shows over the course of the last year. Thanks most of all to all of you, the listeners, for making these shows fun to do. We came close last week. Hopefully we'll get it over the top this week, and we always appreciate all your interactions on Twitter and through the contact page over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kitchen. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your Stronach 5 photos.